Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour, February 6, 2020. And a lot of topics to cover tonight, a lot of very important topics, not the least of which the coronavirus. This thing is going viral. This is not good. It could have been stopped. The World Health Organization completely dropped the ball on it. And I'll be talking about that. That's all I can say. First, a few other topics quickly. Brad Pitt, remember the movie Troy? I mean, that took you back to a time you felt like you were there. I mean, it was a tremendous movie, but I hate to say this. Brad starred, if you want to call it that, in a movie that's out now called Ad Astra. I had the misfortune of seeing bits and pieces of this. I mean, this is just goofy. And they're driving around the moon in lunar, like 1968 lunar buggies, what they call them, lunar rovers. And they have this race, and they're shooting at each other like cowboys on horses. And then he gets to this space station on the moon that's supposedly been occupied by some unknown force. And he gets there, and there are these monkey-looking things, or I don't know, whatever, some kind of monster living there that are killing the astronauts. I mean, this is the worst movie since the Apollo program. That's all I can tell you. And there's more movies out. There's a lot of rah-rah. I think there's one out about Neil Armstrong. So there's all this NASA hype coming about. Somebody's putting a lot of money into the remake of Apollo. That's all I can say. In the president's address to the nation, State of the Nation address, he mentioned Neil Armstrong as one of the great Americans. And, of course, he is obviously a NASA rah-rah supporter, and I don't know if it's political. I can't imagine a guy that is that savvy really doesn't have an inkling about the real situation with the Apollo program. But as with other things, I think he's making very subtle moves to simply eliminate NASA without going out and just saying it. He started the Space Force. And NASA was always a so-called civilian space agency for the betterment of mankind. But I think long before they get to go into real outer space again beyond low Earth orbit, they're going to be shut down. And that's the way they'll work it. And then the Space Force will do things that you don't know about or can't see. And we have to, just like the military, militarizing outer space puts it on a secret level where you don't get to see. And that's what's been going on in the background all along, is a secret space program. So anyway, I think they want to get NASA, they just want to slide it out of there, so to speak. And maybe some of the NASA employees will go over to the Space Force. Maybe a lot of them, because there are a lot of older people there, will just get a retirement and they'll be happy as a pea in a pod, literally, or an astronaut in a pod, because they will be, you know, they will have basically done nothing and earn a nice retirement. So they'll buy their house in Florida or Arizona and Gulf. That's what's going to happen to NASA. And so anyway, I think Trump is just being very political about this, politically correct, should I say, and giving NASA all of the glory and due that, you know, they want, that they don't deserve, but then just slide them out the side door and be done with them. He's already set their budget so it will cut down to zero by the year 2024, by the end of his second term if he's reelected. So anyway, that's my comment on that. But all of these movies are really, and that's, these aren't the first, this has been going on for a while, the pure cleansing of YouTube of all negative commentary about NASA or the Apollo program and or any other NASA program. You know, in the mainstream media, you cannot criticize NASA. Nobody can get in a word edgewise. Neil deGrasse Tyson is the premier host on this masterclass deal where supposedly world experts give classes. And there again, you have the standard science community with all of the publicity, and nobody can get a question in edgewise. I talk about that on my paid cast, something you probably want to join and listen to. I do some commentary on that. Right now I'm involved in my education program, and that's ongoing at this time. I got an email from a listener here. This story, I just can't believe it. New York State is going to charge people to watch the sky. New York State parks. If you are a New York resident, it's going to cost you $35 to go to a park. In addition to your permit to be there, it's going to cost you $35 to stargaze. It's a permit. And if you're out of state, it's going to cost you $60. So it's not like I would travel to New York State to watch the stars. But, I mean, I just, beyond belief, I can't even believe this. So what are they going to have, the Rangers following little kids around, and if they look up in the sky, they're gonna be fined $35 because the parents didn't pay for the sky watching permit? Oh my goodness! I mean, this is just beyond belief. But this is true. That's a true story. New York State parks are gonna charge you extra if you want to look at the sky. I mean, stop and think about this. Whose idea was this? Who thought of this? Looking at the sky now is a payable. Now, and that's just the first one. Will other states follow suit? Thinking, I mean, how much money are they going to raise? You go to the state park and they go, are you going to look at the sky? You got to fill out this form and pay $35. You know, what are people thinking? This is liberalism at its just absolutely insanity worst. Anyway, I just want to comment about the last few weeks. I've been not in my office where I have all my equipment and stuff, and so there's been some difficulties. Last week's show, they replayed the previous week's show, and which had problems airing also. But the shows that for those weeks are on the archives. So go to the archives and you will hear the shows for those weeks. There are just technical difficulties getting it transmitted from WWCR on my end, not WWCR. They did not have technical difficulties. I did. And so but the archives, if you go to my archive page, subpage, it's jmccsci.com, you will find the actual shows for those weeks. And I suggest you listen to them. A lot of great information there. So anyway, now I'm back on track. Just a quick comment on this past week in news. And of course, all of the news media is flooded with this, so I don't have to give you details. But the impeachment finale finally occurred. Mitch McConnell gave his little speech, and then the acquittal vote was guaranteed. This was something that was guaranteed from the very beginning of this whole thing. And no matter which side you're on this event, whether you're a anti-Trump hater or if you're a Trump lover, whatever, this did nothing but divide the country further. It was a divisive event. It had no chance of ever going anyplace, so it was completely a political issue, and that's what this was not ever meant to be. Impeachment was not meant to be, okay, if you can gain the House and there's a president of the opposing party, you trump up some charges and impeach him. I mean, that's what the bar has been lowered from. You know, this only happened two times in the whole history of the country. So it lowered the bar for impeachment. And so this is not good for anybody because, I mean, it's just deranged what happened here. So anyway, next November, the ballot box, once again, this will be put back in the hands of the people. But once again, the cheating, the voter cheating that's going on right now is so extensive that if you're going to vote, go out and vote, because, for example, I estimate, because of my voter cheating study that I was done before, I estimate that Trump will need over 20 million votes to win the election, just to win by one vote. So 20 million people's votes out of 120 million votes total, let's say, 20 million votes are going to be illegal. California is now registering, at this point, up to right now, 4.5 million illegal aliens who they say have the right to register to vote. They say, oh, well, they don't have the right to vote. They're not going to vote, but they should be registered because they get the registration when they get their California-issued driver's license. And so then what happens, though, is that the Democratic Party gets those registrations and will do absentee ballots on those people. That's what's going to happen. So there you have, right in Los Angeles, 4.5 million votes, right there, one city that will provide 4.5 million votes for whoever the Democratic candidate is going to be. And that's another deranged process. I mean, this country, there's no need for foreign intervention. There's no need for foreign intervention on elections in the United States. It's here. It's already happening. Okay, so anyway, on to, let's see, I'm going to leave the coronavirus till the last topic. And, oh, I don't know. This is a little side note I have in my notes here. But when I looked at the Super Bowl, now, I sat down and I watched the Super Bowl, and I watched all of the interviews, and not all of them, but I spent some time watching interviews prior to the Super Bowl and the news media and stuff. And that was like, that's like Americana. That's something very American, and everybody seems to come together and have a great time. Everybody there was happy. There was nothing political. There was no political innuendos. It was a football game. Nothing more American than a Super Bowl football game. And that's what I see, that people happy, out there having fun. They're doing well. They're employed. The economy is doing very well. And that is the America that I see. Then I look on the other side of the table, and I see derangement and hate and gritting their teeth and just going insane. That's not the America that I like. That's not part of America. America is, doing very well right now. And because of that, the rest of the world is doing quite well, except for China, who I believe this coronavirus, I'll just say it right now, is to destroy China financially for signing an agreement with the United States. And this was where this came from. I don't know. There are a number of possibilities, and I'll be talking about those. But there's also a lot of disinformation out there that this was, oh, this just happened. This was just a, no, this was a planted virus. It's a variation of SARS, which was a laboratory virus. I'm going to stop talking about the virus. I'll get into that in a minute. But my point was that the Super Bowl, I saw a lot of happy people and doing well, and that's the way things should be. There's no need for us to be groveling in the dirt with a recession every year and a half. And that's something also. Remember, we used to have a recession, a stock market adjustment, a financial crisis, a housing crisis. Every 6 months, there was some major financial crisis that was going on. And, sometimes it was spurred by international political events that crashed the stock market or something. And you don't see those anymore. And that's something I had said all along, is those things that were planned. Those events were planned, and that's why they hate Trump, because he's running the country like a business. And if you run all of the country like a business and you have a lot of investment coming in, then all of a sudden things you know, that you don't have these cyclic financial downturns. It just goes up and up, and it just keeps going up. And that is why they absolutely hate him, because the elite power structure depends on you groveling in the dirt and watching the evening news and all of the fake news that they've been creating for decades and decades about this war or that war or about this foreign leader that they put in place that went south on a bad drug deal. You know, the CIA has been manipulating the presidential office for decades. And even during the Reagan era, which was a diversion also, they were, you know, Ronnie thought he was going to be president, and so he got a bullet in the side. And that ended that, and George Bush Sr. ran the Reagan White House. And so that's not happening now. In fact, there's very good evidence that the issue over there where they killed that guy in Iraq, that terrorist guy, whatever, Soleimani or whatever his name was, that was another CIA setup, a counterintelligence thing, to cause another Benghazi and then blame it on Trump. And he picked it off. He stopped it. And the word is that there was a lot of activity around the embassy. They were breaking in, and they were going to kill 100 people there in the embassy. And they got it shut down. And this guy was on his way to direct traffic over there for the other side. But that's all CIA coordinated. And they have been doing this, you know, this, the sinking of the boat in Tonkin, you know, the Vietnam War, the Laos, they were in Laos and Cambodia in secret having wars when they weren't supposed to, when Congress said, no, you cannot be there. The CIA was in there with American troops fighting wars. You know, so anyway, this has been going on, and it's not going on now. The economy is booming. It's going up, up, up. People are doing good. You see the Super Bowl. Everybody's happy, except for the San Francisco 49ers. But apart from them and some of their fans, the whole country was very happy. And even those people went home happy Monday morning, returned to their jobs, and which they're getting much more paid now than they were before. But that's the America that's being built here, and there are people who hate it because their little empires are not going to be able to take money out. There's a lot of stuff going in the background, including a lot of the people in Congress are involved in pedophilia, and Trump is going after them and the human trafficking. That's what the open border of Mexico is all about, is drug trafficking, human trafficking, and some of the lowest forms of human endeavor in the world. It's going on that Mexican border. So anyway, the people who oppose Trump want open borders. They want, illegals. You know, that example where I'll tell you during, I watched the State of the Nation address, and when, very telling, when this guy stood up and his brother, imagine your brother is standing there pumping gas at a gas station, some guy comes up and unloads 8 shots into him at point blank range, kills him, and then goes on to kill a whole bunch of other people, and this guy is an illegal alien, and the people, the Democrats, look at that and they sneer, like, how can you talk about that? They sneered at him. I mean, these people are insane. They're insane. How could you do that to people who had a brother shot to death at point blank range by a guy that should have been off the streets? You know, how do you justify this? Excuse me. These people are bonkers. And so anyway, I see America, and I travel a lot. I go all over. I've been in foreign countries, and I'll tell you, the image of the United States in foreign countries is totally distorted, totally twisted. They have no idea what's really going on in the United States, and if they want their country, they say, well, Trump isn't doing things that support our country. Well, they need a president. They need to elect or get a president in office who will protect them. It's not Trump's job to protect people in other countries. It's not his job. It's their president's job to do that. So anyway, this is a long story, but a little bit more than I wanted to talk about. But back to the idea of the Super Bowl, that's the image of the United States. Happy, you know, picnic, the 4th of July, or whatever is going to be, whatever celebration, we should be celebrating the success of the United States. And by the way, in trade deals, there's a lot of controversy about the trade deals. Here's the way it works, and here's the way tariffs are going to work. If those foreign countries don't pay their workers what we're making in the United States, then they get a tariff put on it. In other words, they can't pay their workers groveling wages, then jack up the price and sell that product in the United States, and some guy in the middle makes all that money that should have gone to the workers. So what's going on now, the workers should be very happy in those countries because there's no incentive for anybody to pay those people dirt salaries. And so, that's what it's about. And if somebody tries to bring in a product that undercuts our products, then they're going to have a tariff equal to the amount they're trying to gain. And so anyway, workers in foreign countries are being helped by this. This old idea of, take your factory to a third world country, produce a product. It might be a good product, might be an inferior product, doesn't matter. But you can bring it back to the U.S. and sell it at full price, and you're the guy that makes all the money. Wow. Ain't happening anymore. So just a few comments. People who think that the NAFTA trade agreement helped promote unloading factories from the United States. The current trade agreement encourages companies to come back to the United States because there's no incentive for them to go over there. And it's really a lot more difficult. Logistically, it's a lot more difficult. If there's no financial gain, they come back. It's just like the war industry. And this is another issue that's very subtle. But Trump has built up the military. In the past, the military, to get their money, had to have a war. So the CIA would go out and start a war. The military would go over, fight it. The military-industrial complex would get their money. Well, now Trump is giving them their money without the war. That's what's going on. So he also understands that you need a strong military and that those people are going to get their money. It's kind of like NASA's going to get their rah-rah, ziz-boom-ba support. And so, yeah, the military-industrial complex is going to get their money. So are you going to do it with a war or are you going to do it without a war? And so that's what's going on there. Okay. Just a quick comment. If you listen to last week's show, I talked about the Starlink and Neil, what's his name? Elon Musk put up another 60 of the Starlink satellites last week. And the first load was 30. That was the first one. And then they went 60, 60. This is the fourth one. And so that's 60, 60, and now 60 again. So that's what, 180, 210 satellites up there. And they're going to put hundreds and hundreds of these up there. This is just starting. So anyway, there's a competitor. It's called OneWeb. OneWeb, the word one, O-N-E, and then W-E-B. It's a competitor to Starlink. So now they're going to have thousands of these satellites up there. You're going to have 5G beaming all over you. You're going to be like 5G, you're going to be lighting up with 5G, and telephone service, internet service, etc. But anyway, what's different about OneWeb is they're launching out of Russia. They are launching their satellites out of central Russia. So at any rate, that's an insanity. And remember that the Starlink satellites all have a blinking light on them. So you're going to have thousands of these things going around Earth blinking. I don't know whose idea that was, but it's a terrible idea. Okay, on to this topic, electric vehicles, the Hummer. is coming out, Hummer is coming out with an electric vehicle. And now this is, the Hummer is a, you know, a pretty kind of awesome looking thing on the road. If you're, you know, a soccer mom and you come up to the soccer game with the kids pour out of the Hummer, you know, that's the most impressive vehicle possibly at the soccer field. Or whatever, you know, driving down the road, your Hummer. It's a, you know, it looks like a military vehicle, but kind of civilian. And but they're coming out with a, and it's a powerful vehicle. I mean, it's, if you want to go someplace, the Hummer is the way to go. It'll get there, you know, go through a lot more than most other vehicles. They're coming out with an electric vehicle that is 0 to 60 miles an hour in 3 seconds. Now, that's torquing. That's moving. And it has a 1,000-horsepower engine in it. It has a 1,000-horsepower. Now, just imagine that, a 1,000-horsepower. Your average car on the road today might have 150 to 200 horsepower. So this baby is going to just, you know, smoke. I mean, that's literally these electrical vehicles. If you're familiar with Formula E racers, E-form racers, they're the Formula One style race car, but with electric motors. They actually have to put limits on them, governors or limiters, which limit the amount of power they can use, and they limit the amount of acceleration they can use on straightaways. And if you're familiar with Formula One, there's lots of turns and things, and there are some straightaways, but they get by those pretty quick. A lot of the time is spent in these very tight pin turns. And so when they come out of those, that's where some lane changing goes on, some people getting ahead of the game. But, of course, with the petroleum-based engines, they are they're at their max. They're trying to get as much performance out of those engines as possible. With electric E-formula, Formula One race cars, they have to limit them because they have so much power, they just have to put a limit on them. Anyway, that's pretty amazing. Hummer with a new electric vehicle, 1,000 horsepower, 0 to 60 miles an hour in 3 seconds. That's moving. The Taal Volcano in the Philippines, they're expecting this baby to go any day, and when it does, it's going to go big. Now, what's going to happen is when the it's an island, and so you have the entire Pacific Ocean there that can drop into that magma. So when this baby goes, it's going to go. It's going to go big time. And of course, it's a localized hole in the Earth's mantle and crust goes down into the magma. And when that ocean starts dropping in there and turns into steam, it's going to take that thing sky high. And here's the interesting point. You might think, well, that's far away in a land long, long ago, far, far away. But the issue is that if it sends up enough plume, which it very likely could, a Krakatoa-type explosion, then we could have a nuclear winter, or not a nuclear winter, but a volcanic ash winter for a long period of time. This could be world affecting. And so the issue is that you have to, I don't know. We don't know. I mean, if it's a local event, that would be something. But these events are so humongous. They are simply beyond the control of man. It's beyond our control to somehow modify these. So just unbelievable that this volcano could affect the world. And people are making note that this could change all of the dynamics of alleged climate change. So maybe we'd want to have people, we'd require people to drive their SUVs around the road so the world could warm up again. That would be funny. Wouldn't that be a funny twist on the global climate change people? But the only problem is driving your car around will not cause an increase in temperature or climate. That's a myth. in the very simple, I've said this 100 times, I will repeat it again. Maybe there's some news people listening there, and the people going, all the science is in. There's 100% agreement amongst all top scientists. Well, all top scientists have forgotten about a thing called the Carnot cycle. When you take a train, I have a little video, by the way, on my webpage if you want to go see it. I was traveling one time out in the American Southwest. I think it was in Wyoming. And out in the plains there, the western states. And I came up across a bridge in the middle of nowhere. No traffic, not a car in sight. And there was a train, a double train track going east and west under this bridge. The bridge was to go up over the train tracks. And so at that time, there was a train coming in both directions. So I quick parked, got out, got my camera, and I just set it right on the bridge, and you can see a picture of this. There's a coal train coming one way that's full, and the empty coal train returning the other direction, which was empty. Okay, so anyway, I filmed this, and it went on for minutes and minutes, and it was quite a long video, and when I put it on my webpage, I do a little discussion here. But, okay, take those coal cars full of coal. Let's just take 100 of them. There were thousands of them together on this coal train. Okay, so take 100 coal trains, cars full of coal. 80 of those, when you burn these in the power plant to create electricity, 80 of those coal trains or coal cars, those, you know, that go to the electric power plant, 80 of the 100, that heat from those goes right up into the atmosphere right now. It's called the Carnot cycle. You can only get about 34% maximum useful work out of the Carnot cycle, out of a heat cycle, creating heat and then using that to do physical work, mechanical work. Okay, so, but after the reality, after you take out all the inefficiencies and other things that go on to deliver the electricity to you, you're down to about 20%. So 20 of those 100 cars are actually producing electricity that you use in your house. So 80% of it goes up in heat right now. And so now let's look at the idea of global warming, and what they're implying, they never say it, is the greenhouse effect. Okay, so in 20 years, the carbon dioxide that comes out of the burning of that fuel, in 20 years, that's going to raise the temperature of the Earth's atmosphere by a smidgen. That's what they say. But they don't talk about the other 80 cars which are going up in the form of heat right now. What happens to all that heat? Nobody talks about it. It's heat contamination maxima. When you drive your car down the road, it's a heat engine. About 20% of the gasoline or diesel that you're burning, about 20% of it goes into actual useful work. And so anyway, this tremendous amount of heat, then you're probably asking, the same with a nuclear power plant, or the same with any form of heat engine, of which we have many. And then by the time you get home and you burn say you make toast, or you use an electric oven, or you have air conditioning, whatever. There's a lot of heat that comes out of air conditioning. And so what happens to all that heat? If the question is, it's going into the atmosphere right now, tons and tons more, billions of times more heat going into the atmosphere right now than would ever go into the atmosphere from greenhouse effect due to carbon dioxide. So what happens to that heat? And the answer is that every night when the Earth turns around, that heat goes off into outer space. The immediate heating of the Earth is due to the sun every day. If the Earth stopped turning around, the temperature drops by 10 to 20 degrees every night between day and nighttime. If the Earth stopped turning around, it would be 2 to 3 days, and the atmosphere on the dark side of the Earth would start crystallizing and falling out of the sky. And very soon, we would have an atmospheric problem, because the air then would cycle around to the dark side of the Earth. and it would literally fall as snow on the ground, just like it does at Pluto. Anyway, the whole idea of global climate change, unfortunately, there's no sound science, because they eliminate on both sides of the argument, the people that argue for it and against it, none of them talk about that issue. And it's called the Carnot cycle. It's scientific fact. I mean, anyway, so back to the Taal volcano, we'll see what happens here. But there's another point in that this volcano, the wind patterns typically blow from east to west there and then towards the south. And so that would affect areas there, and it's hard to say how much that's going to affect the northern hemisphere. But in the Krakatoa volcano, when its sister volcano blew up, that took care of, there's also one Tamboro, which created basically a winter type situation. It's hard to say the dramatic effect that this might have in the northern hemisphere, where the majority of the Earth's food is grown, or what effect it might have in the southern hemisphere. It's hard to say. So it's just from past volcanic experiences, though, once this plume gets up into the atmosphere, it's going to take a period of time for it to drop down, and then it starts spreading and spreading. And so the question is, if the global climate change occurs because there's sunlight, not coming in one area, that's going to affect the entire equation of heat for the planet. So anyway, then you have these people that are crazy. They want to put stuff in the atmosphere, and then they want to, it's already going on with the chemtrail spraying. But some people talk about putting reflectors out in space to limit the amount of sunlight hitting the Earth. It's just absolutely insane. One of these volcanoes will negate a lot of climate. And there was starvation in the various times throughout history because of volcanic eruptions. And we're in for another one here. We also have the looming issue of the caldera at Yellowstone. If that thing goes off because they have not drained the lake there, I don't know if there's another issue that could have tremendous effect on the United States. So, okay, with that said, I'm going to jump into the coronavirus, and I'm going to be a guest. I've talked about this on the John Moore Show a couple weeks ago. It was not yesterday, by the way. I missed John's show yesterday. I'll be back next week if you're a regular listener there. But the prior week, I talked about the coronavirus and talked about the issues of not quarantining it sufficiently, not quarantining the virus, the outbreak in China. This thing could have been stopped in its tracks, but they didn't do it. And the Chinese, let it go, just like the Japanese let the Fukushima thing go. There were companies that could have gone into Fukushima immediately. Obama blocked it, and the Japanese government blocked it, just like the BP oil spill under Obama. There could have been companies that came in, could have come in from Europe to cap that thing. They wouldn't let them in there. So anyway, the coronavirus got out of hand because of the ineptitude of the World Health Organization. It could have been quarantined immediately. But now, let me just go through some numbers here. It's just a little practice session here. Imagine that, now these are the numbers we know of, and they let this thing run in public to, as a sampling, as a statistical sampling, to understand the contagious level of this particular virus. It's very contagious, and it can live for up to almost over a day on a hand railing or on a toilet seat. And so if it's there, if somebody has the virus and pees on the gets a little pee on the toilet seat, and somebody else comes in and sits down, that's live there for the next 24 hours. Anybody sits on that toilet seat potentially could get the virus. And then it would spread and they would get infected, it would come in their skin. And then they would go around and contact other people. And so this is a horrific situation. Or if somebody coughs or somebody's breathing in a congested area in China, in these mega cities, we're talking about cities with 300 million people in a city. They're in lockdown right now. Everybody has to work from home. But still, it's spreading. It's spreading because people are coming in contact. You can't be in your house without being in contact with other people. It is said, and I don't know if this is true, that the leader of China has it and will not go into a quarantine session, because basically a quarantine area is an area where I believe you are going to stay until you die. So the president of China will not go to a quarantine area, even though he's got it. So this is absolutely insanity. The workers there are striking because they're forced to go into a hospital or health facility where the people are coming in droves. The official statement is, as of right now, as of this show, is that there are 100,000 cases in China. And I'll be talking about these numbers. These numbers, that sounds like, 100,000 out of billions of Chinese people is not much. But the problem is, these are only the reported cases, and these are the people that are bad enough off where they actually got to go into a health facility. And it's a respiratory disease, just like SARS, where you cannot breathe. You are coughing and coughing to the point where you can't breathe. Okay. So I just want to mention, too, that back in the SARS days, back in the Bush, it was early in the Bush administration when SARS came about, and then there was Merck that was before that. These are all laboratory viruses. And so the current one, what they call the novel coronavirus, what a word. They're calling it the novel coronavirus. It's a laboratory modification of the SARS virus is what it is. And who let it out, or who put it in the Chinese population in the middle of this big megacity, I don't know. I don't know if it was the boys on this side or the boys on that side, but somebody let it out. And there's a lot of people are saying that there was a level 4 mill grade biological warfare research station like 4 blocks away from where this came out. And they had just had some kind of a drill there when the virus came out. So I don't know. I have no idea where this came from. I'm not going to try and speculate but somebody put it into the population, or some way by accident or something, it got into the population there. And when the first 3 deaths occurred, that's when, let me just show you the numbers. When 3 deaths occur, you think, okay, well, 3 people had it and they died. Okay, let us say that 3% of the people who have this die, are bad enough to where they actually die from coughing, so they can't breathe. And this is what I remember people talking about SARS when it was in the United States. They didn't block traffic between China and the United States. I knew people that flew to China during the SARS epidemic and came back. They were in a workplace with hundreds, if not thousands, of workers and flew to Beijing on a vacation and mixed with the public for a week and then came back to work. There was no restrictions of any kind. But what Trump did is he just shut it down. He said, nobody's coming into this country from China. There's not going to be any traffic except American citizens who they're trying to get back, and those people have to be quarantined for a period of 14 days. And anybody coming in from a foreign country, any foreign country, has to be quarantined. And if they had any contact with people from China. So I know this for a fact, that these policies are in place and active. And so all foreign countries are complying with this. Before they let anybody get on an airplane or a boat, coming into the United States, they have to be checked for contact with anybody from China. Or were they in China? Did they have any contact with people from China or animals or farm animals, etc. also? Okay, so let's take these three people that died in China. The very first three, this is back in December. Now, the World Health Organization let this thing run for a month and a half. About a month and a half, almost 2 months before they actually stepped in. And the only reason they stepped in is because Trump made them do this. This is a story in itself, where these guys from the National Institute of Health and the Center for Disease Control got up and did a little presentation. And you can see that online, where they actually make the announcement. And they all look like they got a royal poker stuck up their butt. That's the best way I can say it. And they're all telling about how they're jumping right on this, and there's low risk to the American public. These people in the past never did anything, and they weren't going to do anything again, except Trump stopped it, just like he stopped. Remember the 737 MAX airliners from Boeing? They changed the engine configuration, and these things were crashing. And after two of them crashed in other countries, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, that's full of Boeing executives, said, oh, no, that's not a big deal. We don't see anything wrong here. Nothing here. Just keep walking. And Boeing was going to keep flying these things because Boeing is not doing well. Boeing is financially near bankruptcy. But they were going to keep flying these jets. And Trump said, no, all 737 MAXs, get to the nearest airport, land, and you're grounded. No more until we figure out what's going on here. Turns out there were some problems with the plane design. They changed the engine configuration to be more efficient. They put a bigger engine on the wing because there wasn't enough room under the wing. They put the connector up higher, and so there was an imbalance in the way the engines performed with that airplane design. Simple as that. That's what came out of it eventually. But Boeing and the FAA were going to let these things keep flying. People were going to keep crashing in these things. Plus, the autopilot on it had some issues. It was a new configuration. The pilots were not trained in it, and they didn't know how to find the way to get off of autopilot and fly the plane themselves. And so these things were going to keep crashing. And Trump said, no, all of these planes are down until you figure out what's going on. And so anyway, the same thing was going to go on with this novel coronavirus. Trump said, no, we're shutting it down. Trump, a lot of people are alive today, and a lot of people, the United States is going to be spared this horrific virus. I mean, it still is getting into the United States. But Trump sat down and said, no, this is not business as usual. Okay, so let's go back to the three people die. This is the mathematics of the novel coronavirus from the very beginning. It's the three people die from the coronavirus. So they go, okay, we got something here that's very bad. And it was recognized as a SARS derivative right away. So they knew this was a laboratory. If you were anybody in the World Health Organization, Center for Disease Control, you should have known this was a laboratory virus that somehow got leaked into the public in this Chinese city. And it just happened to be, by the way, a week after the United States signed that historic China trade agreement. Okay, so that's another story in itself. Okay, so three people die. What does this mean in terms of numbers? Okay, if 3% of the people who are actively experiencing symptoms, 3% of those people die, then that means there's 100 people out there that have this. This is just statistics, more or less. Okay, the one thing they found out by letting this thing run in the public is that it had twice the latency time. And latency in a virus situation is the amount of time that people walk around with this thing without showing symptoms, without experiencing any symptoms. So instead of the 2 to 3 days, like for normal flu or normal viruses, The latency period was 7 to 10 days. That's why they quarantine people for 14 days. It's because they got to get over that latency period. So they quarantine. They should have quarantined these people right then and found out where they went to and who they talked to and quarantined a local population. So I'll be looking at that in terms of numbers also. So now we have 100 people in a highly dense Chinese mega city. Those people go to work, they go in the subway, they go to a restaurant, they go to the grocery store, they buy their food, and for a period of 10 days, you have 100 people walking around who are active. Okay, so some of these people might stay at home, but how many people, this is minimally, because there's probably for every 100 people that are showing symptoms, there might be 1,000, there might be 2,000, we don't know how many people actually are walking around in that latency period. So let's say conservatively that within a few days of these three people dying and 100 people showing symptoms and walking into hospitals, where is the best place to get a disease? In a hospital. That's where the sick people go. You know, so at any rate, you have, let's imagine that, let's say 5,000 people. So here are the basic numbers. When those three people die initially, three people die, 100 people are showing symptoms, and 5,000 people are in that latency period. So basically, you've got a little bit over 5,000 people walking around, giving off this virus everywhere they go, touching doorknobs, sneezing on their hands, going to all of the places you go to, going to work, getting on airplanes, flying to other countries. And that's when this thing should have been shut down, because all of those people got it from a single source. Maybe two or three people got it initially, then spread it, then those people spread it, then those people spread it, then the other people spread it. And so this is a very fast-growing virus, but the very difficult part is this high latency period of 7 to 10 days. So the people are walking around. They have no idea they got this thing. They're walking around in a highly dense Chinese, dense population mega city. And so they're going all over. Now, let's go out to the second tier. 5,000 people walking around for 7 to 10 days doing whatever, and everybody they come in contact is a potential victim. Now, those people walk around and go to work and go on the subway, get on airplanes, fly to the United States, fly to other places. And this goes on for a month and a half before the World Health Organization, because of Trump, not because of anything they would have done normally, because historically they have done nothing. They do what they call, we're monitoring the situation. And SARS eventually went away on its own, which is very interesting. This all brings up a whole question of viruses running their course, etc. SARS was eradicated because of, that's a whole other issue. I'm not going to talk about that right now. But the current coronavirus is now in 23 countries. In January, there were two cases that turned up at the University of Miami. So there you go. You got two cases in the United States. Once again, a high-density population region, University of Miami. They're walking around, going to class, going to the library, going to functions at a school, at a university, and passing this off to other people who don't know that they're getting it. Okay, so in the United States, you might have better treatment so that not so many people are going to die. But once again, you have people walking into hospitals that are going, you know, I got this, I really feel like terrible, so I'm going to the doctor. So the doctor's there, he's breathing it in. Everybody who goes to that doctor potentially could get the coronavirus. I mean, this is a a very dangerous situation, and it could have been stopped immediately. Right now, there's an estimated known 100,000 cases in China, and it's the estimates are that it's 500,000. I would say no, it's probably in the tens of millions right now in China. The airlines have shut down traffic to China. And so the I know the airlines that come in from China, the people are quarantined. Simply, there's no other thing. They're put in a 14-day quarantine. And I don't know if they're putting them in hotels. I don't know what they're doing with these people, because it's a very tenuous situation, because say they put them in a hotel room. Well, for the virus can live in that hotel room for another day or two without any type of support. And if you got into a corner where it's damp, or there's some, the potentially a warm, damp corner, the virus could potentially live longer. Well, they don't know. They don't know all of the factors relative to this, or say a toilet seat or something like that, or a sink where it's always got water and it's wet and it's warm and humid. And so anyway, the question is, where are they keeping these people? I don't know how they're managing this, but anybody coming in from China has to go into a quarantine, and they're only letting American citizens back who want to get back with their families. So in a lot of those cases, the people are staying in China because they don't want to go through the airport. They understand that. Now this brings up another question, is how do you get food to hundreds of millions of people who are in a lockdown situation, cannot leave their apartment? This is really a horrendous situation, and it's going to affect China and China's economy for a long time to come. I know there's situations where factories are operating, but under very controlled circumstances. But anyway, the end result is that it's the human contact that is the issue. It's not so much the say a product that's shipped from China is going to be, typically if it comes on a boat, it's going to be weeks on the ocean before it ever gets to the United States. So there's no issue of products being shipped from China coming to the United States. That's not an issue. But the problem is the people coming from China, but the trade, etc., all of the activity, how can a Chinese country with that much activity exist? It's going to be a major economic problem. But I'm going to be talking more about this topic, but I just wanted you to understand the numbers involved here. And the best thing for you to do is filter your water, for one thing. And if you do have to go traveling or something like that, wear one of those masks. They're very inexpensive. Buy a breathing mask and go if you're in the airport or public areas. And just keep your family safe. That's all I can tell you. This is Jim McCanney. Remember my website, jmccsci.com. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.